If it's 30 years and older, which I'm assuming it would be, I would probably recommend a structural inspection as a condition of the purchase because they're not really built to last in Japan. So once they hit 30, 40 years of age is when things start to deteriorate a bit more rapidly. Also, you want to watch out to see whether you're on city sewage or septic tank, which is not too bad, but if you're on the old, they call them night soil, it's basically a cesspool under the house and it stinks.
Yeah, I think I have seen some of the houses that I looked at did have that system.
Yeah. So if you need to replace that with at least a septic tank, that'll be another 1 million yen or so. If you can connect to city sewage, depending on how far the pipes run to your boundaries, it could be maybe 2 to 3 million, the plumbing work, depending on what. So maybe factor that into your consideration. Or we just focus on houses that are at least on a septic tank, but that'll limit your choices more. Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over 2 decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so here we are again, only a month and a half left for the spring session of the Japan Real Estate Summit at the Pullman Hotel in Tamachi, Tokyo, also streaming online. And tickets are selling fast, so don't wait for the last minute. Tracy Northcott from Tokyo Family Stays, Blanca Kobayashi from Arc Reform, Emil Gorgis from realestate.jp, Robert Miller from innovations.com, Tatemono IQ, Chaikanda Yizang and Ben Howard from Shiki Properties, John Cross from MailMate, Shumatsu Post and Brett Lee from Akia Hub, Matt Ketchum from Akia's, Mark Drebkin from Yen Loans, Ben Tanaka from Retire Japan, Alicia Kin Wang from Axolotl Capital, and little old me. We are all waiting to see you. Hopefully you're waiting to see us as well. And aside from the amazing presentations, the private consultations, the hands-on workshops and breakout rooms, the Q&A panels, equally important, if not more so, all of our amazing community, all of you folks who have been coming back time after time, year after year, and a whole lot of new faces, bilingual real estate professionals, tax and financing professionals, Japan lovers, property market enthusiasts from all over the world will be there for the country's best and biggest industry event. So if you know you'll be attending in person or online via the stream, where you'll also be able to network with the other online attendees and float questions to the main room speakers, all of which will be answered live on stage, or as many of them as we can get to. If you know that you'll be attending, I'd pause this episode right now. Hop over to summit.realestate.jp to secure your tickets today. Again, they're selling fast. They're quite likely to run out if you wait for the last minute. And we're looking forward to seeing you all on the 18th and 19th of April, Saturday and Sunday, in person at the Pullman or online in the streaming room. Only about 40 sleeps to go. Yay. All right. So for today's episode, three back-to-back conversations, again, with first-time buyers. This first one is with an Australian YouTuber, and he visits Japan regularly looking for a cheap Akia to be used as a holiday home, but also as a home base for his traveling around the country, up to 2 hours from Tokyo, fairly limited budget. So we have a short chat about the new business manager visa criteria and also about whether he can buy and register a car to drive on a tourist visa. both of which are services that we can assist with here at Nippon Bridge, which handles all matters that are not directly related to real estate in Japan, which is what Nippon Tradings International, NTI, handles. And then we dive right into the nitty-gritty of this kind of purchase. So the potential issues with these older structures, sewage facilities, deterioration, ongoing maintenance, the works. We also talk about what working with Japanese realtors is like and why a proxy or buyer-side agent is often a good idea. And of course, about our services, how they work. So enjoy this first conversation. And don't forget, there are two more coming right after this. Cool. So I read through your email. I've got a rough idea, but maybe need the background, because it sounds like there are a few moving pieces there, like your content and YouTube and so on.
Yeah. What are you up to? I am a content creator in Australia, and I've traveled to Japan. Well, I've been traveling to Japan since 2019.
Oh, where in Australia, by the way?
Queensland.
Ah, I lived on the Gold Coast for about 10 years.
Oh, really? I'm Sunshine Coast, like literally.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Wow, small world, crazy.
Yeah.
I've kind of been planning on moving to Japan. Obviously, I don't really have like a long-term plan for Japan, but it's something that I've been wanting to do for years now. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of hoping to purchase an IKEA out, not in Tokyo or anything like that, and basically just live there depending on what visa I have, and kind of just use it as a base for when I travel around Japan. That was my plan for it. And then obviously, because I am involved with like content creation, kind of, you know, document my life in Japan and the whole experience, to be honest. That's kind of what I was hoping to do with it, and kind of the ideas in my head that I had for it.
So the visa situation you're mapping out separately, you, because a lot of people were going for the business manager visa, but that,
yeah, the amount just went up. I can't because it went up from, I think it was about
5 million to 30 million.
Yeah.
Plus a bunch of other restrictions. So,
yeah, full-time employee. I think my initial plan right now is working holiday visa. And then obviously over time, you know, I travel to Japan at least once a year. The last, I was there at the start of this year for about 3 months. Okay. So it's going to be something that I'm always coming back to regardless. So that's really my plan, kind of working holiday. And if, you know, if I have to do my tourist visa every year, that's kind of, I'm okay with that.
Okay. Well, I mean, that gives you up to 6 months a year. It's not too bad.
Exactly. Yeah. That's kind of what I had in mind for it.
Got it. And with the IKEA, you're saying countryside, but what kind of countryside are we talking? What distance to what major city?
I was hoping, in my mind, I kind of had about 2 hours drive or train from Tokyo. I was looking in the Shibukawa, Kyu area, about kind of in between Nagano and Tokyo.
Okay.
That's kind of just what I've been looking at. I originally was looking around Fujikawa, around that area near Mount Fuji, but I still am not totally sure as to where I want to be. I just know that, you know, Tokyo is like a main hub that I think I will be going to a lot, and I'm most familiar with. So I was hoping to keep it around that 2 hour.
2 hours from Tokyo is a lot of countryside. That should be okay. What's the budget roughly?
The budget, I'm still not 100% sure, to be honest. I was hoping around the 4.5 million mark for an IKEA. Obviously, I wanted something that I understand.
A house, not a condo, yeah?
A house, yes.
Okay. Well, it's going to be 4.5 million. I mean, if it's very rural, then maybe that would be 30 years and younger, but most likely a bit older than that.
Yeah.
So two factors there. First off, if you compromise on the distance to get something younger, which is what I would recommend just to avoid surprises, That might mean you'll have a bit of a long walk to whatever station is the nearest station to you. So how far are you okay with being from a station, assuming you're not going to be driving?
I was going to, if I'm there for long enough, I was going to purchase a vehicle for the initial time, but I guess when I'm coming back on the tourist visas, I wouldn't have access to a vehicle unless I hired.
No, that's not exactly correct. I've got another company that helps people with non-real estate related stuff. We have had success, I'd say 11 out of 12 cases so far, where we manage because the national legislation does allow for non-resident foreigners to register a vehicle to drive. It's just a matter of local municipalities not knowing how to deal with the documentation that's required because they've never done that. So we've managed to convince or educate 11 out of 12 cases. We managed to show the local municipality that the national legislation actually allows it and kind of work with them on the documentation. We've got one stubborn municipal official in one case who's still refusing to accept it. And the National Vehicle Registration Authority doesn't want to get involved, even though it's legal. They don't want to force them. So we're still working on it, but it is technically possible in most cases.
Well, that's definitely something, because like in the recent times where I've gone, I just hire a car. Obviously, if I'm going to be there for working holiday visa for the year period, I'd like.
You don't want to leave a car undriven for like 6 months of the year. You need to get somebody local to just drive it around a bit. Otherwise, your tires will die and all kinds of bad things happen to it.
No, that's while I was there on the working holiday, I think I was going to purchase a vehicle, but obviously once that's up, I kind of don't want to have a car for sitting there for a 6 month period.
Okay, so back to the original question. So assuming you might not have a car at the start, how far are you okay with walking to a station?
Half an hour, 20 minutes.
So then hopefully we can find something that's not going to be super old at that price, as long as you're okay with it being a little bit less convenient. If it's 30 years and older, which I'm assuming it would be, I would probably recommend a structural inspection as a condition of the purchase because they're not really built to last in Japan. So once they hit 30, 40 years of age is when things start to deteriorate a bit more rapidly. Also, you want to watch out to see whether you're on city sewage or septic tank, which is not too bad, but if you're on the old, they call them night soil. It's basically a cesspool under the house and it stinks.
Yeah, I think I have seen some of the houses that I looked at did have that system.
So if you need to replace that with at least a septic tank, that'll be another 1 million yen or so. If you can connect to city sewage, depending on how far the pipes run to your boundaries, it could be maybe 2 to 3 million, the plumbing work, depending on what. So maybe factor that into your consideration. Or we just focus on houses that are at least on a septic tank, but that'll limit your choices more.
So septic, prioritize septic over.
Well, prioritize city sewage if you can, but the further away you are from a major metropolitan center, the more likely it's going to be at least a septic tank. There's just not going to be sewage available because they haven't rolled it out that far. Otherwise, okay, so I. Two options, three options that we could normally help with. One would be to do everything on your behalf. You just need to talk to us and we join all the meetings, we sign all the documents, we talk to the agent, the lawyer, etc. And for that, we charge a minimum of 500,000 yen for houses, so which is 5% of 10 million yen. But that we're not going to be able to do until earlier next year. We're just recruiting and training. So what we can do if you want to pull the trigger before then is, firstly, I can just introduce you to a foreigner-friendly, English-speaking buyer-side realtor who'll help you with the purchase. So they'll be able to handle everything same as we would have done on your behalf. They're not being realtors and being Japanese. They're by the book. Their job is to make sure the transaction goes through legally and properly, but they're not going to be super strategic. Like the kind of conversation that we just had, like watch out for this, watch out for that. That's normally not their job. So I can either introduce you to one and jump out. We don't feel obliged to hire us. We don't need any money for that. Or if you want, we can stay with you As you work with the agent and guide them on due diligence, review the documents before you sign them, review the structural inspection report to get, just make sure you're not making any costly mistakes there.
Yep.
So that we can do at any time, and that's 88,000 yen. So about 900 Australian.
So the main, like, because I'd already been in contact with real estate agents just via translator, but the main issue that I was finding is, especially in that area, the area that I was looking, a lot of them,
it's same as the municipalities, they've never worked with foreigners, they haven't got
so exactly.
Either us as your proxy or a buyer side real estate agent who knows what they're doing and is licensed will fix that problem in vast majority of cases. You'll still run across, I don't know, 10-15% agents who just don't want to deal with a foreigner at the other end, but most of them will be okay with that.
Okay, great.
But I'd let your Japanese rep make the initial contact, because once you contact them on your own and they recognize that you're a foreigner, they're kind of on the back foot already. And then when we contact them a second time, it's a bit of a harder sell.
Yeah, understandable. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Well, yeah, no, that's definitely like what I'm after. So for yourself or your company, you said not till early next year, but you can...
If you want us to do everything on your behalf, so you don't need to talk to any third parties, and we handle everything at a fixed price, that's going to be early next year, and that's going to be about 5,050 Australian.
Yep.
At 5,500 Australian. Or if you want to go cheaper or start earlier, then about 900 Australian, then I'll put you in touch with an agent and kind of hold your hand and guide the agent on what we want done along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I can just put you in touch directly with them. They'll be able to service you in English. That's not going to be an issue. They're just not going to be super strategic about it.
Okay. I think that, you know, I kind of had an idea. Like I've been kind of searching this up for a long period now, kind of understanding what to look out for, what to not look out for, you know, certain things based in, like, you know, like building inspections, earthquake codes, etc. Like I have put in a lot of research, and I guess I was, I just don't want to make the wrong decision on a house. That's the only thing. So it's like you've got the experience and like expertise in it. I guess if I have tried with the person that you suggested, is there any ways like that I could still contact someone from your team or yourself?
You can bring us in at any stage of the process. It's always going to be the same price until the end of settlement. So I mean, you can start with them, but I just, my only concern there is just make sure that you're not spending any money before we've vetted the properties, right? If you get a bunch of listings and you schedule viewings, you get somebody to go out there and do a remote viewing for you, or you're going to go with them if you're here, that's going to cost, you know, a day's travel and expenses. And structural inspections are going to cost about 1,000, 2,000 bucks per property. So just make sure you're not pouring too much money into the exploration before we've reviewed them, because we might raise some red flags that you haven't thought about, and just save that expense, right?
Yeah, no, that makes sense, definitely.
Okay. But yeah, otherwise at any stage. So I can put you directly in touch with an agent. You start working with them. Once it gets serious, you loop us in then, or you loop us in from the get-go. It's going to cost the same amount anyway.
Yeah. But you would not, you know, you said early next year would be the time that you could start, you know, looking at it all for me and stuff like that.
Oh, no. We again, if we're going the consulting way, which means it's only me, I don't need any of our Japanese staffers to back me up, then I can do that anytime. If you want us not consulting, but doing everything on your behalf, so you don't even need to talk to an agent or a lawyer, et cetera, then that part we can only do next year.
Okay.
But the results will be the same. It's just that you'll be a little bit more involved the consulting way. That's all.
Yeah. So early, because the plan was, I was kind of hoping to be over there within in 6 months' time. That was kind of the plan that I had in my head. So I guess that's still...
Over there, you mean moving into the house that you've purchased?
Possibly, yes.
Yeah, 6 months is more than enough time.
Yeah.
I mean, your budget is a little bit restrictive, but I can't imagine we wouldn't find anything within 2-3 months.
Okay. Yeah, that's, I think, I honestly, I'm happy to wait a little bit longer and make the choice to go with you, because it just to me seems like the expertise is what I require as well. And so I think that would be more beneficial.
Okay, well, in that case, if you ping me towards the middle of January, once we're done with all the holiday period and all that, I'll be able to tell you whether we're already in a position where we can do everything on your behalf. And if not, then we'll go the consulting way then if you want. You'll have the expertise either way. Again, the only difference is whether you'll need to be in touch with the agents and the lawyers and sign documents on your own, or we do it on your behalf. That's the only difference. The expertise will be there. I'll be with you every step of the way, whether it's consulting or full facilitation.
So you think that the smartest decision would maybe to be to go with the consultant first, start looking at properties, etc., and then once that period comes where you can start, I guess, handling it for me sort of thing, that would be the best way to go about it.
But you wouldn't need the full facilitation. If we're going the consulting way, then it'll be me advising and making sure that everything's done properly, and the agent will handle all of the logistics of the purchase themselves. So you wouldn't need to switch from one to the other. I guess it's just a matter of how hands-on you want to be, and if you're comfortable spending a few thousands as opposed to a couple of $100. That's all.
Yeah, no,
Sorry, as opposed to about 1,000.
I think, if you can send through the contact of the consultant, and then I will be in contact with them and kind of begin the process, I guess.
Yeah, so what I'll do is, are you on WhatsApp at all?
I am, yes.
Okay, so I'll reply to your last email with just a blank signature that has my mobile number on it. And then you can just add me on WhatsApp, send me a little emoji or something, and then I'll kick off a WhatsApp chat group with whichever agent is most readily available.
Great, great.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to speak to me.
Oh, pleasure. Looking forward to helping you with that.
I'm really looking forward to it too. It's quite
Awesome.
the journey, but yeah.
Cool. I'll talk to you soon. And then next time we talk, you can tell me more about your content and collaborations and stuff. We're always.
Yeah, definitely. Yep,
All right.
for sure.
Talk to
All
you
right,
soon.
thank you very much. Appreciate
Pleasure.
it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, if you're actively looking at property in Japan, you should check out Akiya Mart. That's AKIYA hyphen Mart, MART, akiyamart.com. It's the Zillow of Japan, built for buyers who are actively hunting for a home in Japan and want a much more Western-style web browsing experience than the typical local Japanese websites. Now, we've got an exclusive 30% off promo code for the AkiyaMart Pro annual plan. That's the one that gives you full access to Airbnb zoning maps, hazard maps, sold data, and over 500,000 listings nationwide at any given time. So if you're serious about buying in Japan and you want an easier way to search, this is the best tool that we know of. So you can use my code ZIV, ZIV at checkout and get 30% off your AkiyaMart Pro annual plan at akiyamart.com. All right, so this next conversation, again with a first-time buyer, and since he's in the market for both holiday homes and investment properties, we talk a bit about the difference between the two and which property profile might work best for each purpose, the limitations of condo units, yields in various locations around Japan, with a more detailed review of various locations within Fukuoka City, which is where we're based and where he's particularly interested in. How to structure a diverse and stable investment portfolio, capital growth potential, property management and how it works here, how utility payments work for tenanted properties, taxes, insurance, and then a more detailed explanation of how tenancy leases actually work in Japan. So we cover Japanese tenancy laws, inspections, renewal or cessations of leases, renewal fees, and so forth. And finally, the pros and cons of buying vacant versus tenanted. So, nice deeper dive into what investment actually means when purchasing here in Japan and how it all works. Enjoy this chat as well. And again, one more call coming right after this.
Okay, thank you. So I've gone through your email. You're talking about at one point you mentioned a holiday home, but then in another reply you wrote unit. So I wasn't sure if you're referring to a condo or a house.
So this is something I want to explore with you in regards to what type of properties that suits as well. I think what I have in mind is this is my first property or first investments in Japan. So what's something like, just to get a taste of it and how to kind of work with property in Japan. So something that's like lower risk and less kind of hands-on. I watched a few videos of you talking about the different type as well, and just want to explore a little bit more and comparing between condo or unit, which is a little bit less hands-on than less risk,
Yeah,
where
you've
with
mentioned
homes a bit more.
you're saying in, sorry, can I interject with questions and stuff?
Yep.
Is it okay? So you mentioned investment and, you know, safe and so forth, but you're talking about a holiday home that you're going to be renting out when you're not using it. This is not exactly what I'd classify as an investment. This would at best maybe cover costs. So that's
Yeah.
thing. Secondly, with condo units, you're not going to be able to lease them out short term. Even medium term, monthly would be challenging, but definitely not short term.
I see. I see.
I can get into the reasons for that if you'd like, but it's just not. Basically, the legislation says that for a condo unit to be available for short term rentals and get a license, the owner union needs to specifically write in the rule book that they agree to short term rentals in the building. And 99% of owner unions will never agree to that in Japan. They're not interested.
I see. I see. So I think for the discussion today, I mean, let's focus on the investment rather than kind of a holiday homes for now. Like, I think holiday home is something we can probably explore in the future, probably fewer or more property to invest in, and we can think about that in the future. But I think for this call, I think let's focus on the investments one, and I think long term rather than short term.
Okay. So then I wouldn't go for, you wrote in your email up to 20 minutes walk to public transport. I definitely make it 10 minutes or less. And to get reasonable yields, I probably wouldn't go for a 2LDK. I'd go for a studio or single one bedroom. Maybe 1LDK is the biggest idea. Otherwise, the yield starts dropping quite significantly.
And then what sort of view that we're looking at, like typically in city
Well,
like Fukuoka?
super safe and central, I'd say maybe about 4% if we're lucky, if it's in one of the major suburb, not suburb, major city centers like Hakata, Tenjin, maybe all the way to Ohori Park in the west, and as far south as Roppongi in the south. I wouldn't go much further east from Hakata Station because that becomes very residential and less central, essentially. But we could potentially find something there. In those areas, I'd say up to about 4 and a bit% before tax.
Before tax,
Yeah. If we go more suburban, maybe up to 5.5, 6, if we're very lucky.
I think. All right, so but it's still kind of condo unit that we're talking about, like
Yes.
4%.
Yes. For long-term leases, I wouldn't necessarily go for a single-family home. They're not really built to last in Japan. So, they're just not very durable materials and kind of flimsy structures. They're kind of expected to completely deteriorate within about 40 years. So, if you're buying them, let's say 30 years and older, you're buying into more or less rapidly increasing maintenance costs, right? So you start $1,000, $2,000 a year in maintenance, then it slowly creeps towards $2,000, $3,000 a year in maintenance, and so forth. So I'd probably, and it's a lot more of a hassle to constantly deal with those maintenance issues, right? So
I
I
see.
probably, for headache and expenses, to have, you know, a condo unit where I pay the building fees for the building maintenance and for the management for the condo building, I know exactly how much I'm paying every month. So building fees will creep slightly upwards over the years. But if we buy a concrete structure, we buy 30 years and younger, then we start considering reselling it as it approaches 40 years. And in that period of time, we know roughly, I mean, there are no big surprises. We know at least approximately how much we're paying every month. It's not going to be, if it's going to be increasing, it's not going to be hugely increasing, and just less headaches and surprises.
Right.
I mean, you can do well with a single family home long-term lease investment if you want to turn it into a bit more of a project. So we look for something that's fairly cheap and in fairly bad shape. We'd factor in the cost of a renovation. We'd buy it and then renovate. So we'll have 6, 8 months. I don't know how long it takes without having an income stream. And then we'll start looking for a tenant. If we do that, which is a much more hands-on involved project, then we could potentially get higher yields. And then a single family home does make sense. But if we want to remain semi-passive, which is usually most of our customers, then we would be buying something younger, in better shape. And to do that with a house in a good location would be very expensive.
Yeah. I think this is because this is our first time doing it. So something like a condo unit sound like a better fit. Once you got more familiar with how things work, particularly with the tax and everything, then I think we can go a little bit
asset allocation wise, it also makes sense to establish, you know, 60, 70, 80% of your portfolio that's nice and safe and stable, and then get creative and adventurous with the rest of it, right?
For sure. Yeah. In terms of the yields, is there much difference between big cities like Fukuoka, Osaka, or Tokyo? I think that's the only three areas I look at earlier, but perhaps you got some ideas and what are the areas that potentially have better yield?
Tokyo specifically, unless we're very lucky, we and our clients normally avoid. The yields there are pretty low. Prices go up a lot sharply, and rental yields, while they're higher, they don't go as high as the price. So that gap between the purchase price and the rental amount is where you lose your yield. But I would also consider semi-central Yokohama.
Okay.
If you want to stay near Tokyo, also Saitama City, which is about 30 minutes north of Tokyo. Chiba City, which is 45 or an hour southeast of Tokyo, but also within an hour to Narita Airport. That's also a good location to hit. If you're going to be near Osaka, Kobe City is interesting. The population there is in slight decline, but it's still a very big popular city. If you want to be in Kyushu, then Kumamoto City, about 2 hours south of Fukuoka. TMS, the Taiwan chip manufacturer, built a huge factory there. That area is becoming very popular and prices are still quite low there.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
And any prefectural capital, like the biggest city in an otherwise rural prefecture, like Kumamoto City, like Takamatsu City in Shikoku, or bedroom communities that are within 45 minutes to an hour from Tokyo and Osaka, for example. Those would be interesting locations, but again, a little bit less safe and stable. Yeah, so you're getting a little bit adventurous in you know, in the search for slightly higher yield.
Right. And you mentioned also property management is something you're also offer as a service to. Would that cover other cities or just mainly
We're all over Japan because we're not the realtors handling the purchase and we're not the property managers handling the management. We're outsourcing and managing third parties on your behalf. So we pick the best agents to work with in each city, the best property managers, and then we manage them for you.
I see. Makes sense. Okay. Cool. With regards to cover the locations.
To probably cover price, I think.
In terms of tax or maintenance fee for condo unit or utility as well, what's the typical cost? Is like how was it? Maybe utility, for example, are they?
Utilities are on the tenant. They'll be signing up for utilities and they'll be paying it. Some of the older buildings might not have individual water meters, in which case the owner union will be charging a fixed amount to each unit every month and your tenant will be paying that as part of the rent.
Okay.
But in that case, when the unit is vacant, you'll still need to pay those communal water fees. So that's maybe, during a vacancy, that's maybe, I don't know, $15, $20 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have a tenant, again, the tenant will immediately be paying for that themselves.
Okay.
Tax-wise, as long as you're under a net income of 485,000 yen from memory per year, you're tax-free in Japan. You still need to pay, you're from Australia, right?
Yeah,
Yeah, you still need to pay the difference. So you'll bring in your zero tax statement from Japan, and then you'll need to pay whatever you need to pay based on your income threshold in Australia.
right. I think, yeah,
So if you
that's
have
true.
to, with those units that we're talking about, depending on how old they are, but normally if you have a single condo unit that will be generating, let's say, 2,000 to 3,000 bucks a year, so you're going to be well under the reporting threshold. Once you expand to two or three units, then that'll be something to talk about. But tax in Japan is a lot lower than Australia. Yeah, there's
Awesome.
I think up to 20,000, like between 485,000, which is the minimum reporting threshold, and all the way up to 1.9 million, which is about 20,000 Australian. You just pay 5%, right? Once you go beyond 20,000, all the way up to, I forget,
Okay.
but then it goes to 10%. It's a very gradual thresholds there. It's not gonna kill the bank.
Right. And insurance requirements for these rental properties, are they
A
compulsory?
few hundred bucks for a 5-year policy for a typical condo unit that we're talking about. So
Okay.
a slightly older building in those cities. Let's say up to about 300 or 400 bucks a year normally, for a 5-year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I don't know, what's that, 80, 90 bucks a year. And then you want landlord
Yeah.
insurance in case the tenant dies in the property to cover you for the cleaning expenses and the reduced rent afterwards for 2 years. That's about
Yeah.
100 bucks a year as well per tenant.
Okay. Right.
So I'd say probably a little under $200 a year for total insurance.
Okay. It's not bad. Cool. Good. See if I have any other questions in here. With regards to the rent, how long is the typical kind of contract would be like in both for long term? I guess
So
we can.
the normal long-term lease tenancy contract in Japan are for periods of 2 years, and then they automatically renew unless one of the parties notifies the other that they don't want to renew, which you need to do within 6 months before the lease expires. In Japan, though, it's a very tenant-oriented legislation. So you're not allowed to cancel mid-lease, but the tenant, even if they do cancel mid-lease, the most you'll get from them is 1 or 2 months of rent compensation. And you would normally not be raising the rent or terminating the lease even when it expires. Tenants do have a legal leg to stand on grounds of unfair raises or unfair termination. No Japanese tenant has ever taken us to court. They're very conflict averse. But to avoid that situation, if you do want to notify a tenant that you'll be asking them to move out, then firstly, practically, I'd check that you can actually get the same rent, because sometimes rent drops over time in Japan, depending on what salaries are doing and how old that building becomes.
See.
And secondly, I would offer them somewhere between 6 to 10 months rent compensation, which is what it costs them to move. And
All
then
right.
it's very likely that they're not going to make a fuss. I mean, again, they're probably not going to make a fuss anyway, but to be on the safe side, I'd offer them compensation.
Okay. And with regards to the management, do they I'm not sure if it, how often they do inspections and all that
No
later.
inspections in
They do.
tenanted properties. Nobody enters unless the tenant requests it. So even if you're buying a
It's
property
different.
tenant
Yeah.
already in there, you're not going to be seeing the interior.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's a bit different
Which is another advantage.
regulations.
Yeah, it's another advantage of the smaller units is that there's only so much that it can cost to renovate 20 square meters of space, right?
Yeah, it's good. And with the renewal, would they typically incur any cost with the property manager or
normally
renewing lease and things like that?
It depends on the lease. So when you buy a property with a tenant already in there, which is what most of our clients like to do because they like turnkey and having income from day one rather than buying into a vacancy. So if we inherit an existing lease, an existing tenant in place, then whatever that landlord had in place with the tenant, sometimes the tenant will be paying the renewal fee, sometimes it'll be the landlord. Normally it amounts to about 1 month of rent.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. It's all good. I don't think any have anything else that on my list.
What's your budget for the purchase? I don't think we discussed pricing yet.
Oh, the budget. So yeah, I'm looking at like probably 100K.
Including all costs, or is that just the listing price? Because costs can be, let's say, up to about 15% on top of that.
Yeah, I think too. I think let's see if I it's in there. Like if it below 200,000K, I think in total, like include everything, that's something we have budget for.
Below what? Sorry.
200.
Including
thousand Australian dollars.
Including all costs.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's about 20 million yen at the moment.
20 million, yeah.
Yeah. We divide that just to remove that 15%. That gives us listing price of about 17.5 million yen. Okay, so that might even fit two units in Fukuoka City, I think.
Oh, okay. It's even better.
Yeah. It gives us more diversity, bit of a geographical spread. I like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, we can buy a single, much newer, much more central unit that would give us, you know, a good profile and potentially more capital growth potential if and when that occurs in Japan, because that's always a bit of a guess. But the yield, the rental yield would be lower in exchange for that. So you'd be looking at maybe 4.5% as opposed to the 5.5-6 that we could potentially get to with something a bit more, a bit older and suburban.
Right. With regards to, I mean, growth, like capital gain, would they add, would they also something we can kind of look for a condo unit in central area as well, or?
The more central, the more likely. And Fukuoka City definitely has been gaining, along with Osaka and Tokyo, the you know, the sharpest gain locations in the country. So when the economy does well, Fukuoka Central definitely gains. But whether that'll be the case or not is a bit over my pay grade, right? We've had a good 15 years, back of 25 years of deflation and government change. China is here. The Ukraine is not too far away. There's debt to the GDP ratio, population, workforce shrinking. So a bit over my pay grade to say if that'll continue or not. But the closer we are to central and the newer the building, obviously, the more capital retention or gain potential we have.
Yeah. I think my focus is definitely on the cash flow at the moment. So
That's what most people come to Japan for. That and the hassle-free legal recourse kind of environment.
I see. Yeah, that's cool. That's all I have.
You mentioned that you're gonna be here in December to look at units, but if we're going for investment units, unless you're buying vacant, all you'll be able to do is look at the building.
So you can't even go in and have a look, or
not if it's tenanted. If you want to look at vacant units to give you an idea of what you can potentially get, and we can make estimates on what the rent amount might be, then we can do that. But if you're buying vacant, that means, the advantage is that you're going to be getting something that's been recently renovated, the interior. So that big unknown situation with nobody in the unit for 15 years is not going to be an issue, because you'll be able to see the interior and you know that you don't need to renovate for at least a few years. But you are buying into, 2, 3, 4 months of vacancy before the income starts coming in.
I see.
You still need to pay building dues during that time. So it's a little bit less known on one front, a little bit more known on the other front.
Mm-hmm.
And also the rent, we can only assume what the rent amount would be. By the time we start advertising, depending on what's going to be available on the market, it might be a little bit lower than what we're assuming. So the projections, the spreadsheets, everything we're going to do in a vacant unit is going to be assumptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they also vacant, tenant condo on the market for sale too.
Most of the investment properties on the market are, they're called owner change in Japan, which means tenanted, yes.
Tenant. Okay.
But we can definitely buy vacant if you want.
Yeah, I think there'll be less headache to have tenants already in there and paying the rent.
It's the safest. It's the safest route. Yeah. But that means that if you come here, you're just going to be able to, you can definitely explore the city. We'll show you different suburbs and we'll show you buildings and we'll show you, maybe we happen to have a vacant unit at the time that you can look at, but you're not going to be looking inside too many units.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's makes sense. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll be around December in Tokyo, Fukuoka, I think mainly, and then travel down to Okinawa. But yeah. I think this mostly in Fukuoka and Tokyo.
All right. Well, just give me at least a week or two heads up because the diary does fill up pretty quickly. And if you do mm-hmm. want to potentially take you to look at some listings, then give me maybe 2 weeks' notice.
Okay. So that's good. And it's okay. What do we need to do from here? I think I've read through the PDF of all the services you offer and also the procedures in there.
Yeah. So the PDF describes our purchase facilitation service, meaning you only need to talk to us and we do everything on your behalf. You don't need to talk to the agents, the lawyers. You don't need to sign any. You need to sign a couple of pages, but you're not involved actively in the process. That one we're not going to be able to do until the start of next year. I hope around February or so. If you want to pull the trigger before that, I'll put you directly in touch with a foreigner-friendly realtor who'll handle the logistics of the purchase in English remotely on your behalf, same as we would have done. They're not super strategic, so they're not going to exactly analyze potential deals with you and raise red flags. Their job is to research listings or work with listings that you provide and then just make sure the transaction goes through legally. So if you like, we can come in as consultants for a few $100, which is also cheaper than having us do everything on your behalf and just guide due diligence, tell the agent what we're looking for, review documents together, just make sure you're not making any costly mistakes as you work with them.
Okay. Would you think it would be better to do it prior to the visit on December? Or
what's that? Sorry?
Should we do it prior to the visit, like in December?
Well, if you know you're going to be moving, in the next couple of months, then there's no reason not to. Then we'll loop in from now and we'll give them the criteria. We'll tell them exactly what we're looking for. And yeah, so okay. I can either introduce you to them and jump out of the conversation. Don't feel obliged to hire us or stay on and consult as you work with the agent.
I see. Yep.
And if you want us to... If you want us to do everything on your behalf, so you just need to sign the bottom line kind of thing, that'll have to be February-ish next year.
February. Okay, cool.
I hope. We've hired and are now almost finished training 2 new bookkeepers, which is where we had our bottleneck. So, we're just growing a little bit too quick and haven't prepared for it. So, I hope everything will be back on track for full purchase facilitation from February.
Awesome. So good.
Yeah. But consultation while you work with the agent, we can do it anytime, and it's also cheaper. It's 88,000 yen for a 10-hour retainer, as opposed to the few thousand bucks that it costs to have us do everything for you.
Right. Yeah. All right.
Give us some heads up and let us know if you want us to just introduce you or be involved in the conversation, and we'll take it from there.
Okay. So good.
All right. Looking forward to seeing you. That's next month. We are in November.
Yeah. Well, it's fairly quick towards the end of the year already.
Yeah. Well, regardless of whether we end up working with you or not, I'm happy to meet for coffee or dinner or whatever. Just let me know.
Okay, excellent. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thanks for your time. Talk to you soon.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiv Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today. All right, so this last one is an audio-only recording, and this buyer also wanted to discuss investment properties on a specific budget, up to 20 million yen, or about 130,000 US dollars, as per the current exchange rates. And so we discuss cash flow versus potential growth, which of these should buyers focus on when purchasing here in Japan, the yields advertised on property listings websites and how those are a little bit different or a lot different from real yields, insurance policies, what's covered by the tenant's policy as opposed to the landlord's, taxes, again, accounting, bookkeeping, buying under individual versus corporate ownership, how to find relevant listings, buying buildings as opposed to condos or houses, which also led us to doing at least one live analysis together. And finally, we also talk about how soon investors can expect to gain their capital back to use for either scaling their portfolios or any other purpose. So enjoy this final conversation, and I'll see you again one last time on the other side.
Cool. So I read through your email. You started off with a cheap holiday home, but then we ended up talking buildings, right?
Pretty much, yes. I think I'm sorted on holiday home at the moment. Okay. And I guess really what I'm just trying to identify and see if it's even possible. Like my budget's around 20 mil. Yep. Could go a bit higher if, you know, really a great place. But looking for something like a high yield investment, strong rental demand, low downside risk.
Specifically not, in Nagano?
No. I'm not fixed on location. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Hoping you just tell me where money works best. Ideally near like a major city or an employment hub. Probably cash flow first on this one, growth second, unless you tell me otherwise. I'm trying to obviously hoping that you would.
Japan being Japan, and even more so now with the new government, I would never recommend anything but cash flow here.
Okay. All right. Good.
Yeah. I mean, the last 15 years have been good to property prices in you know, most of the big cities. And recently they started kind of creeping upwards in the countryside too.
Yeah.
But that's on the back of the 20 years or so, 25 years of deflation, and on the back of the shrinking population and the GDP to debt ratio. Too many headwinds.
Okay, fine. Then that makes sense. Like I see some listings and they're listing like 20% yields and, you know, things like that. So I don't know how real they are or if they're just discounted because no one can get loans for them.
Well, first off, the yield that they quote on the listing websites, especially if it's a condo unit, is very, very gross. Like it's not even close to net yield, even though they call it net yield. So it doesn't include the purchase cost. It doesn't include the property management costs. Sometimes it includes building fees for a condo unit, sometimes not. So I'd punch those numbers into an Excel sheet. We can send you a template, and then that'll tell you what the real yield is without somebody managing it for. So are you, you've mentioned setting up a GK. Are you based in
Japan? Well, no, I'm in Hong Kong, and when I said that, I hadn't looked into it yet, but then after looking into it, it seems quite expensive. And I recall you told me last time that you guys have an account that you can accept payments. So therefore, I thought, well, why don't I just set up the Hong Kong company, purchase it through that, just more for the liability and insurance issues. And then that way...
Liability, unless you're catering to tourists and hospitality properties, this is usually not an issue in Japan. It's very much okay. The opposite of a litigative society.
I was more just worried the building collapses or something like that. And then at least you've got that.
You're insured for that, and the tenants are insured for their own physical well-being and their property. The thing is that even if you're purchasing under a foreign company name, you still need to declare your taxes in Japan, and accounting and bookkeeping for a company is a lot more expensive than for individuals.
Oh, right. Okay. So would you recommend just putting it as an individual and no need of the company?
Unless you're doing anything, you know, especially creative with it, definitely. Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah. So if it's going to be, you're talking investment, you're talking 20, 25 million yen. So that's probably going to be a condo unit or a house if you'd like to buy into a project. And those would generate an income, if we say conservatively, like 4 or 5%, it'll be like, you know, half of that will go for the accounting and bookkeeping costs, because that's going to be like $2,000-$3,000 a year, right?
Right. Okay. So maybe not then. Maybe just do the individual name.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense now.
Yeah, okay. Okay, and then I was keen just to hear, like, would you source these places? Do you go through just listings, off-market options?
So one of several ways, if any of the agents that we're already in touch with and have done business with have got anything that fits your criteria, then they could potentially send us listings before they publish them online. So it's not really off-market. It's just maybe a few days before they go online. Otherwise, we will be looking at the two major websites for investment, are Rakumachi and Kenbia. We'll be looking on there. And when we contact the listing agents, it's a new listing agent for us. But if for any reason the property they've published is not quite suitable, then those agents as well will be able to look out for us, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and then there's a bunch of channels.
Okay. And then assuming you find, like, you know, the place, do you just do video walkthroughs, or do you actually inspect it? Does someone in your team go out there?
Well, if you're buying an investment property, depends on what you want to go for. A lot of our clients prefer to buy turnkey tenanted properties, in which case there is no inspection.
Yeah.
Nobody can enter a tenanted property in Japan unless it's by the tenant's request. If you're okay buying into a few months of costs before you start getting income, then we can target vacant properties, in which case we will be able to conduct a viewing. But normally, if it's a turnkey tenanted one, then we'll be basing a rough assessment on how long the tenant's been in there, what's the tenant's profile. Like, you know, a woman in her 40s takes a lot better care of the property than an elderly gentleman in their 70s or a young kid. And then based on the maintenance request that they've submitted, if they've submitted any during their tenancy, that all gives us a rough idea of what sort of bill we can expect if and when they move out.
Okay. And then in terms of due diligence, is that something that you guys just do before recommending it, or is it only after, once you kind of move to sort of an offer, zoning and, you know, those sort of things?
Well, zoning, if you're doing long-term lease, zoning is not an issue. Anything that'll be on the market is in the right zone. Are you targeting houses, or are you okay with condos?
Personally, sorry, I just got to get my dog away.
Yep. I got cats here. They might jump into the frame at some point.
That's all right. I was personally thinking more a building, like an apartment building. Like, I was looking at ones...
For 25 million? What kind of buildings are you looking at?
So I saw one in Sapporo. There was it was a four-bed apartment block in there was one there. There was a couple like 30 minutes from the Sapporo city, but obviously I don't know anything about the location, so it could be
Well,
like
30 minutes from Sapporo City, what sort of tenant base would you get there for long-term tenants? I don't imagine there'll be too many.
I'm not sure, but this is, I guess, where I kind of look to you, like if this was your money, what would you do with it? I'll trust you.
The buildings that we've seen and have purchased ourselves or on behalf of our clients usually start at around 40 to 50 million yen.
Okay.
And that means that it's going to be, because it's going to be at this budget, it's definitely going to be a wooden structure. It's not going to be a concrete block normally.
Yep.
And then if it's a wooden structure, we want to buy something that's 20 years and younger, because once they hit about 30, 35 is when the maintenance expenses start, increasing more rapidly. We
Yep.
want them to be within a 10-minute walk to a station.
Okay.
And we want them to be, like you said, in a in a city with a decent employment base, not like a one pony kind of town with a single employer and declining population kind of thing. So those would tend to start at around 40 to 50, 45 to 50, I'd say.
Got it. Okay.
And obviously not central Tokyo, Osaka, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, Sapporo specifically, you want to factor in extra maintenance costs for the heating equipment
Right.
and extra vacancy costs, because if you happen to lose a tenant just before or during winter, then you could be looking at 4, 5, 6 months wait until people start looking at property. Nobody likes to run around look at properties in the winter there.
Yep. Okay.
So in Sapporo, we'd probably target higher yield to compensate for that.
Got it. Okay.
Nagoya as well is very blue collar, so we do have more payment and vacancy, like sudden vacancy issues there.
Yep.
So there as well, we'd be aiming for higher yield. Ideally, if it's your first investment, I'd probably target semi-central Yokohama, Saitama City, the outskirts, not really the outskirts, but suburban Osaka, semi-central or suburban Fukuoka. Maybe Kumamoto, if you want to be a little bit adventurous, that town's been picking up quite significantly, and it's a smaller city, but it's got a very good profile, and prices haven't gone very much, very up, haven't risen that much yet.
Okay. And you're thinking in those sort of locations, it would be more a house or.
A house is a project, so if you're buying a house, first off, it means you're buying something with a bigger plot of land compared to a condo unit, where you only get a fraction. Which means that it's for the same budget, it's not going to be very central. It's going to be more suburban, a lot more suburban. And the other thing is that houses are not built to last. I mean, they are also wooden structures, but they're not nearly built to last as the small buildings do. So again, I'd aim for 20 years and younger. And there as well, to get really good bang for your buck with a house, you probably want to be buy something a little bit dilapidated and bargain, and then start working on renovating it so that you can get a tenant in there who'd be comfortable there. So you're definitely buying into some expenses, and then there's a bit of a question mark as to if they go well, then they could be higher yield than a condo. But again, there's a lot less known when you're purchasing vacant. And also during the renovation, we think the renovation is going to cost AA, but then something comes up during the project and it's going to cost A plus, right?
Yeah, fair enough.
So it depends. I guess it depends on your risk appetite. The houses can potentially make for good investments, but it's more of a question mark.
I wish I sent you the link earlier, because there was this building in Teen. It's like four beds. Or four apartments in one block, 20 million.
How old
Because
is it?
that's let me see. Let me just bring it up on my phone. I've got it. I
Oh,
just
yeah,
don't
that's
I just I
definitely
don't know
worth
how
it.
to I don't know how to send it in here. Let me see if I can.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable. tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
But ideally, this is like something like this is what I'm looking for.
Yep.
I just don't know how often something like this comes up or if this is even any good. So.
Okay, so it is within Sapporo City. You meant 30 minutes from the center, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. Built. Okay, so first off, it's built 1991, which makes it 35 years old. That's about almost double the age that I'd recommend to buy them at.
All right.
That's the first thing. The other thing is, hang on, let me see. Doesn't say how far to the station. Let me just drop that on the map. Oh, that's an English website. I thought I was translating it, but it's only English. Okay. I wonder why they're not writing distance to station. Let's have a look.
Because ideally, I was thinking of a strategy, and you can tell me if I'm just dreaming. I'd get something like this. It says 20% yield. It's in my head, all right. In, you know, 5 to 10 years, it pays off in between that period, depending, assuming it's all full. And then I can then use that cash flow to then get the next one and just, you know, start the portfolio that way.
Well, you're not going to be able to qualify for loans in Japan. There's a first step. Yeah.
So yeah, that's fine. Because then I was thinking like each time I'll just do something similar, and then that because I'll buy this one in cash, this one would then pay off the next one plus the next one's rent. So you just keep accelerating over time.
Well, how do you mean it'll pay off the next one though? It's going to take you. Oh, you mean you're going to get all of your capital back and then buy another one?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And then you'd use the cash flow from this, say in like 10 years, if it's paid off, plus the cash flow for the next one to pay off the next one.
What do you mean by paid off? Where are you going to get the loan?
So just cash, just savings.
Okay. So, I mean,
assuming I bought this for 20 and then it pays back the 20, I'll then use that 20 and then get the next one.
Yeah, but I mean, the best case scenario for us so far when we've been dealing with buildings was about 6.5%.
Yep, okay.
So that means that it'll take you about 16 years to get to the next one, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd compensate with savings, I'm sure, but still, it's not going to be 5 or 6 years.
Sure.
And the other thing with this one is it's 15 minutes walk to the nearest station, which is already... 5 minutes further than anybody and most of your tenants would want to live.
Right.
So it's not ideal, especially the age. I really don't like a wooden structure that's 35
that old
on purchase, because that's the age where I want to be selling it.
Okay. Got it. So yeah, no, definitely very helpful for you to kind of give the advice, and I'm sure you'll be able to recommend the right one. In terms of like next steps, I guess. So I assume I sign a contract. Do I pay the fee up front, or is that after, or is there a partial payment, or how does that work?
So normally that's the way it would work, and we always charge up front. But at the moment, for the next 2 or 3 months, I'm hoping more like two, we're a little bit too swamped to take on full purchase facilitation, meaning where we do everything on your behalf and you just need to talk to us.
Yep.
And we attend the meetings and we sign all the documents, and you just need to sign a couple of documents at the start and finish. That one we're not going to be able to do for the next 2, 3 months.
Sure.
If
Okay.
you want to pull the trigger before that, I can put you in touch directly with a foreigner-friendly agent who will be handling the purchase on your behalf, in English remotely, same as we would have done. Realtors being realtors, they're not super strategic, so their job is just to make sure the purchase goes through legally. They're not like the kind of conversation that we just had about, oh, maybe not, maybe this one, maybe two. They're not going to do that. So
Right.
we can come in as consultants for a few $100, which is also a lot cheaper than having us do everything on your behalf. And then we'll be holding your hand, kind of thing. So we'll create a chat group with the agent. We'll guide them on due diligence. We'll guide them on the criteria for the research. We'll make sure we review all the documents before you sign anything. Make sure you're not making any costly mistakes. So that we can do at any time, and that's cheaper. If you want the full purchase facilitation, that's going to have to be February or March.
Yeah, I think I'll prefer the full, just because I trust you. You said, and
Oh no, we'll be involved
even
every step.
chat,
We'll be involved every
even.
step of the way, both ways.
Okay.
We're going to be there. It's just that you're going to have to be a bit more hands-on.
Yeah, I'll probably prefer, your later stage if that's all right. I'm not in any urgency to kind of move forward. It's just on my to-do list, and the sooner, obviously, the better. But yeah,
Okay.
March is fine as well.
Okay. Well, in that case, if you ping me around mid-February, I'll be able to tell you how far we are from being able to do that.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. And yeah, the city, if you want to look at listings, then maybe focus on the cities that I've mentioned there.
Yeah.
And until we get started, feel free to send me any li do you have a WhatsApp or Line or any of those?
Yeah, I got WhatsApp.
Okay, so I'll reply to your last email with just a blank signature that's got my mobile number in it.
Okay.
Just ping me on WhatsApp, and then we'll carry on the correspondence there, because I'm a lot more responsive there. Emails take me a while to get to.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
All right.
All
Pleasure.
right.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
So there you have it. So many topics we've covered in these three calls. I hope it brought you some value one way or the other. And of course, the conversation will continue, as will a whole lot of other conversations that are way over my pay grade, from the horse's mouth, so to speak, by all of our participating speakers, experts, and sponsors at the Japan Real Estate Summit Spring Session, 18th, 19th April, Saturday, Sunday, at the fabulous Pullman Hotel in Tokyo, and online via the stream. So grab your tickets today before you go on to your next podcast episode. I would advise at summit.realestate.jp. Again, tickets are selling fast. Not sure how many will be available if you wait for the last minute, and we cannot sell them on the day or at the door. So again, grab yours today. Now, we can't let you go without telling you all about Yen Loans, our latest sponsor. They're a new non-bank lender offering financing to non-residents of Japan for purchases of Tokyo condominiums, soon to be expanding to other major cities as well. So definitely hit them up if you're looking to purchase in Osaka, Fukuoka, Kyoto, or any other big city too. And that's for any purpose, whether it's a holiday home, investment rental, or a combination of both, without any requirement for residency, a Japanese bank account, a Japanese corporate structure, or representative director, any of these things, and with a streamlined application process too. So reach out to them through the link in our show notes and let them know that you found them on the Japan Real Estate Podcast. And if you're quick enough to be one of the first 10 completed applications, you'll receive a 25% discount. That's 50,000 yen off the 200,000 yen application fee. To qualify, apply through the link in our show notes again, or enter the code JREYL on their website, yenloans.com.
And that's it from us for this episode, folks. Huge thank you for tuning in. Please do follow and subscribe to the show if this is your first time listening, and we'd love it if you could like and even share this episode with anyone you think might find interest in it. But even more importantly, we love hearing from you. So please let us know what you thought about this episode or the podcast overall in the comments section here on our social media channels. We've got a very active Facebook group and business page, both under the name Japan Real Estate on Facebook. And that's also the name and URL of our YouTube channel if you'd like to follow us there, Japan Real Estate on YouTube as well. And we'd of course appreciate your rating or review on Spotify or on the Apple Store or wherever you're tuning in from. Hope to have you with us again. Have a great rest of the day or night ahead. よろしく。